receive his punishment because that was right. It was more than honor, more than contract. It was who he was. And yet, if the things Milan had said were true, ruin has returned.
How can you just sit there? Milan said. You're stronger than they are, Tensun.
Tensun shook his head. I broke contract, Milan.
For a higher good.
At least I convinced her.
Is it true, Tensun?
She asked very quietly.
What? Oh, sir,
he had the blessing of potency.
You must have inherited it when you killed him. Yet they didn't find it on your body when they took you. So what did you do with it? Can I fetch it for you? Bring it so that you can fight.
I will not fight my own people, Milan, Tensun said. I am Chandra.
Someone must lead us, she hissed.
That statement at least was true. But it wasn't Tensun's right. Nor really was it the right of the second generation, or even the first generation. It was the right of the one who had created them. That one was dead, but another had taken his place. Milan was silent for a time, still kneeling beside his cage. Perhaps she waited for him to offer encouragement, or perhaps to become the leader she sought. He didn't speak.
So, you just came to die, she finally said.
To explain what I've discovered, what I've felt.
And then what? You come, proclaim dread news, then leave us to solve the problems on our own?
That's not fair, Milan, he said. I came to be the best Chandra I know how.
Then fight!
He shook his head.
It's true, then, she said. The others of my generation, they said that you were broken by that last master of yours, the man Zane.
He did not break me, Tensun said.
Oh, Milan said. And why did you return to the homeland in that body you were using?
The dog's bones, Tensun said. Those weren't given to me by Zane, but by Vin.
So she broke you?
Tensun exhaled quietly. How could he explain? On one hand, it seemed ironic to him that Milan, who intentionally wore a true body that was inhuman, would find his use of a dog's body so distasteful. Yet he could understand. It had taken him quite some time to appreciate the advantages of those bones. He paused. But no, he had not come to bring revolution. He had come to explain, to serve the interests of his people. He would do that by accepting his punishment as a Chandra should. And yet, there was a chance, a slim one. He wasn't even certain he wanted to escape, but if there was an opportunity... Those bones I wore, Tensun found himself saying. You know where they are? Milan frowned.
No. Why would you want them?
Tensun shook his head. I don't, he said, choosing his words carefully. They were disgraceful. I was made to wear them for over a year, forced into the humiliating role of a dog. I would have discarded them, but I had no corpse to ingest and take, so I had to return here wearing that horrid body.
You're avoiding the real issue, Tensun.
There is no real issue, Milan, he said, turning away from her. Whether or not his plan worked, he didn't want the seconds punishing her for associating with him. I will not rebel against my people. Please, if you truly wish to help me, just let me be. Milan hissed quietly, and he heard her stand.
You were once the greatest of us.
Tensun sighed as she left. No, Milan, I was never great. Up until recently, I was the most orthodox of my generation. A conservative, distinguished only by his hatred of humans. Now I've become the greatest criminal in the history of our people, but I did it mostly by accident. That isn't greatness. That's just foolishness.
It should be no surprise that Elend became such a powerful allomancer. It is a well-documented fact, though that documentation wasn't available to most, that allomancers were much stronger during the early days of the Final Empire. In those days, an allomancer didn't need Duralumin to take control of a Chandra or Kolos. A simple push or pull on the emotions was enough. In fact, this ability was one of the main reasons that the Chandra devised their contracts with the humans. For at that time, not only Mistborn, but soothers and rioters could take control of them at the merest of whims.
21. Demu survived. He was one of the larger group, the 15% who grew sick but did not die. Vin sat atop the cabin of her narrow boat, arm resting on a wooden ledge, idly fingering her mother's earring, which, as always, she wore in her ear. Kolos brutes trudged along the towpath, dragging the barges and boats down the canal. Many of the barges still carried supplies, tents, foodstuffs, pure water. Several had been emptied, however, their contents carried on the backs of the surviving soldiers, making room for the wounded. Vin turned away from the barges, looking toward the front of the narrow boat. Elend stood at the prow, as usual, staring west. He did not brood. He looked like a king, standing straight-backed, staring determinedly toward his goal. He looked so different now from the man he had once been, with his full beard, his longer hair, his uniforms that had been scrubbed white. They were growing worn. Not ragged, they were still clean and sharp, as white as things could get in the current state of the world. They were just no longer new. They were the uniforms of a man who had been at war for 2 years straight. Vin knew him well enough to sense that all was not well. However, she also knew him well enough to sense that he didn't want to talk about it for the moment. She stood and stepped down, burning pewter unconsciously to heighten her balance. She slid a book off a bench beside the boat's edge and settled down quietly. Elend would talk to her eventually. He always did. For the moment, she had something else to engage her. She opened the book to the marked page and reread a particular paragraph. "The deepness must be destroyed," the words said. "I have seen it, and I have felt it. This name we give it is too weak